Okay, so let me introduce the second speaker of this afternoon, session member of the Department of Computational Sciences, Antal Jakovács. He is head of the Artificial Intelligence Complex Computation Research Group. He finished his studies at the Aalto University and acquired his PhD in 1996. Then he moved to Hamburg, returned, went to CERN for a longer period, worked for the Technical University of Budapest, then Wuppertal. He visited and for, he made a detour to the industry, if I can call it, to the Morgan Stanley major bank. Now he's at Wigner for our luck and leading our artificial intelligence research group. So the floor is yours.
Thank you very much for this kind introduction. So we'll change a little bit topic after this nice talk of nanoplasmonics. And I would like to talk about physical ideas in artificial intelligence. Just to check how it works. Okay. Since it's a symposium dedicated to Wigner, the heritage part, I have found some citation from Wigner. Actually, great people said anything about everything, so one can find nice quotes from them. But anyhow, Wigner wrote in one of his paper in this the correct one, the physics and the explanation of life, is that I believe that the present laws of physics are at least incomplete without a translation into terms of mental phenomena. And even we don't share, or I personally don't share his views about consciousness and the quantum measurement, but I share his devotion to extend the laws and thoughts of physics into other areas of life. And nowadays, this mental phenomena can studied actually in computers in some sense, and we will look at how in which sense. In computers in a form of machine learning and artificial intelligence. So in some sense, his words can translate today that what to do physics with artificial intelligence. And I would like to talk about that topic later. For an introduction, I think I need not to present the recent impressive developments in artificial intelligence. Everybody knows it. Everybody meets it in all the areas of life. Actually, we live the time of generating a revolution when we have text generation, image generation tools around, like ChatGPT, AutoGPT, Bing, Bard, and so on and so forth. Image generation, Midjourney. This person doesn't exist. I propose for everybody who don't know these sites, try out and have fun with it. Actually, all of the images except for this cartoon, I made it myself with these tools. So this seems to be so intelligent, so developed, these tools, that some fear the AI doomsday, that somehow they will overcome us in the near future. On the other hand, it's also true that any intelligent and useful tools are there, but they are quite heuristic, quite improvising. Some say that they are lying, these chat bots. So the situation is confusing, even in that level, that what is intelligence? AI, is AI intelligent or not? And in what sense they are mental? Referring to the words of Wigner. So let's go around a little bit of intelligence in general. So the problem is that human intelligence is not a monolithic entity. There are a lot of models in psychology This is one of the most celebrated one, the Kettlehorn Carroll theory. They divide the human intelligence in three strata: the narrow, the broad skills, and the general intelligence. And even in the broad skill stratum, there are a lot of components of human intelligence: the fluid intelligence, crystallized intelligence. So fluid intelligence we use for reasoning and analysis. Crystallized intelligence is used to use acquired knowledge in conversation and so on. Memory, visual perception, auditory perception, and so on. So it's a quite a complicated thing, not one thing that there is an intelligence. And the next aspect of the thing is another one. There is a categorization in cognitive psychology about the modes of thinking. And also I recommend everybody for Daniel Kahneman's work of Thinking Fast and Slow. Here he speaks about two kind of mode of thinking, system one and system two. System one is the fast, automatic, intuitive, and no way of thinking with no conscious awareness. When we do something without thinking of that, when we drink a tea, when we walk around, when we play actually a good table tennis player, plays without knowing what he actually does. An unexperienced tennis table player has to look for every little movement he does. So this is the system one is the fast, automatic, and intuitive way of making actions, and it is ideal for fast, accurate responses. As I've said, this is car driving in a good case, playing table tennis, walking around, and so on. On the other hand, system two is another other system. This is a slower, conscious, deliberate, controlled, a more relaxed but more thorough way of thinking. For example, when we start to learn to drive a car, and first we have to, and like in the table tennis example, we have to listen to every details around us. But after experience grows, we lose control. I mean, we release control, and we come from system two to system one. But system two is necessary tool for contemplation and understanding. Okay, now the point is that we humans, as I've said, it is not a monolithic entity. So we use all parts of intelligence and all system one and system two at once. We are a compound of all of this of these ways and modes of thinking. But this is not true for AI models. AI models is very, very sharp, very, very narrow, have narrow skills. And actually, the performance of AI very much depends on the task we want to solve with it. But if we encounter with an AI such linguistic abilities like the ChatGPT, we tend to think that thinking that it is some kind of human, that in other areas of intelligence it performs as well, as good as in linguistic case, but it is absolutely not true. It's very narrow skilled tools. So actually, the holy grail of artificial intelligence is to find a question. So to find a question if the answer is human intelligence, and we don't know yet this question. And what we do nowadays is to have guesses of the question. We hope that the answer is the human intelligence. The first task was maybe in historically the Turing's definition of intelligence. I will come to that. Almost the mainstream AI uses a classification task, the generalization of the classification task. And as will be turned out, I will show you that we nowadays build exclusively system one, the modes, thinking machines. The question is how to go further, how to build a machine using system two, a deliberate conscious thinking. And I would like to argue to you that to study scientific understanding may lead us to this area of intelligence. Let us show. Let me show how it goes. So first, Turing's definition of intelligence. So he in 1950 he had a definition that an intelligent actor is a talking machine who is indistinguishable from human in discussion, or at least for a big enough jury. And people took it seriously and created chatbots. With them, we could discuss and we can argue. And there are famous programs in this sense, that the ELISA program from Joseph Weizenbaum in the 60s in MIT, and the other one that I would mention is the Eugene Boostman. This is a chatbot mimicking a 13-year-old Ukrainian boy. And this program actually passed Turing test in 2014. And still, we don't think they are intelligent beings. Why? Because they are not, the impression of everybody who is talking with these machines is that they had the impression that they try to mislead the jury, that they try to deceive them, that to pass away the difficult questions. So they are tricky. And and sometimes they manage to pass the test, but they are not really intelligent. So this is, although it could seem a good candidate for human intelligence, but it is not actually. The next trial to build a thinking machine, an artificially intelligent, an intelligent being, is the generalization of the classification task. Here the definition, more or less, it's not spoken out, but tacitly it is somehow it's thought that something is intelligent if it classifies things like we who humans do. So that means that we present for the machine the correct answer, and it will learn, and it will generalize, and it will be the correct, it will be intelligent in that way. It has a very nice mathematical background, has a probabilistic interpretation, Bayesian analysis, a lot of people working in mathematics in practical applications. And we have seen where we are now with the splendid and excellent applications. Yeah, but there are a lot of technological improvements in that DNN, CNN, ResNet transformers, and so on and so forth. I don't want to go into details. As I've said, the most present-day successful artificial intelligence applications use this method, the classifiers and generators. What is the properties of this kind of intelligence? They are very fast, very effective. So if just think about a ChatGPT who can serve millions of people at the same time. So it's very, very, very effective, very fast programs, very good interpolation properties. But they have some disadvantages, apart from the technical ones. The one is the slow training. It needs very lot of data and uses a large amount of parameters. In the case of ChatGPT, it uses 500 billion parameters, 500. It's huge, as one cannot imagine that how large amount of parameters are is that. Compared to, as Wigner said, that if I have four parameters, I can beat an elephant, and with the five, it's also the trumpet is moved. Trump, okay. Anyhow, so 500 billion parameters is a lot. The second problem is that there is no control over the mistakes. This is the second one, because how it works is that it gives an answer without knowing why. That it has an input, learn what is the correct output, and it gives the output without knowing that it is correct or not. It is an educated guess of the correct answer. So it's quite error prone. The next thing is that the input output function is a continuous function. and that therefore it cannot train with very unbalanced data sets. So it cannot we cannot teach an AI program that what is cat and no cat, because for no cat images are much more than cat images, and we cannot fit it in with a continuous function. And then and lastly, they are very specific, that they are good just for the task which are planned for. But all of these properties of this of the present day AIs are characteristic for system one mode of thinking. So that's why I think that nowadays we build a system one machine. The question is, are there alternatives? How can they do it differently? Just let's think about that. Imagine that our task is to determine that in an image there is a cat or there is no cat. So this is which I've said, it is very, very notoriously difficult to solve with the present day AI applications. How would you do that? Of course, as I've said, you can find a single continuous function, because the number of no-cat images is more than the number of cut-off images, like in the factor of 10 to the millions. There cannot be one continuous function. But how we solve this problem, that we do a logarithmic search. We have split the domain into halves, and if we can do it in independent ways, we can narrow the common region. And actually, this is how we can proceed, that we shall proceed. That means that we shall choose properties that is true for cats. For example, they have four legs, they are fluffy, they have cat-like ears, and so on and so forth. They has whiskers. And these are the properties of cats. Of course, four legs, and not just cats has four legs, that the chair has four legs as two, but it is true for all the cats. This is the important thing. These properties that is true for all cats, we call selective coordinates, selective features. So this means that in mathematical formula, this feature applied for all cats, it gives zero. That means that the inverse image of zero is an subset of cats. And if we find a lot of such properties, the intersection of them will narrow to cats. This is the logarithmic search idea. So what is there? How can we also used to call this thing here a law, because it's true for all of the cats. So it's a law of cats in some sense. How can we do it practically? That means that instead of to train with human annotated data sets, we shall seek facts that are constant, that are zero, for all elements of the given set. These are the laws. In practice, of course, there are no exact laws, but we can then represent the data with the best laws and iterate the process. And as I've said, we are in the beginning of this path. There is a lot of things to understood, but we have made a practical approach, which we call the law-based feature transformation. Let me just go with some properties of that. So the advantage is that we have a very nice control over mistakes, because we have a lot of laws. If one of the laws doesn't fit, then we know that something doesn't fit in the classification as well. It can be used with unbalanced data. We have no forgetting property, because we can collect all of the laws, and it's quite a fast training. The advantage is that it has a complicated hierarchical setup, which is not known and understood enough yet, and the applications can be slow. But still, I think that we are in the beginning of building a system to a mode of thinking. And there are some applications in our group, in Vigna. We analyze time series with law-based artificial intelligence. And now we have some successes. For example, in one of the human nation classification database, we had reached 100% efficiency first in the world. We do ACG analysis with quite a good efficiency. We need more data, actually. We do physics as well. So we do observing the mechanical motion, we determine the laws of the Newton laws behind. And also we do some finance and applications like Bitcoin stochasticity analysis or cryptocurrency price trend predictions with quite a good results. And we hope that it will continue this in this area. I would like to mention one short thing if I have some minutes yet. And this is that what is the connection with the scientific understanding which I promised in the beginning. So actually, this way of thinking is very, very much aligned with how we understand things in science. And let me demonstrate it in the case of statistical physics or thermodynamics. So first, we do all of possible observations. We determine which are the microstates. And the generalization of the microstates are the facts we collect from the world around us. But we are interested, not the microstates, but we are interested in the infrared physics, the macrostates. And can be generalized as a context in a wider context. For building a model, we use state variables. What are state variables? State variables are something which are characteristic for microstates are constant over microstates. For example, volume. So we collect all of the microstates which has the same volume, same energy, same particle number. These are the state variables which we build our models. And exactly what we do here, we collect laws which are constant over the microstates, the facts, well, over the context, and we build a model over these relevant quantities. And one thing yet, 1 minute, should I stop here? Okay, thank you then. Then this is the end of the story. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Maybe we shall have a question which allows you to continue.
Your way of model building dictionary of scientific understanding is a little bit idealized still.
Why?
So why? For example, regarding thermodynamics, the second law was the first that was discovered and based on wrong premises on the conservation of caloric. So then corrected and then recorrected,
sure. That,
generalized.
That's how things work. Yeah, exactly. This is the logics, well, how we shall follow. So we have to determine what are the microstates, what are the microstates, and what are the laws which are common for all the microstates. And we have to find out what are the state variables. For example, instead of heat, we use entropy and so on and so forth. This is the logic which has to be iterated. That's right.
Tony.
Okay.
I'm in the back. I have a question.
Yeah.
Can these computers ask the question, what is the question? Do you understand?
Yes, I understand it. Maybe it's the next step, not the first one. No, without joke. Well, after a while, I think, and we are working about and we are speculating on that after a while, the system should be well, how can I say it? be aware of itself, of its own phenomena, of its own context it contains, and then it can determine the laws of its own working, and then this question may arise. But it's very, very, very far, I think.
No, I think they need to have a finite. I mean, they have to be aware of the finite existence to be able to ask good questions. We all have this opportunity for us, but. This question is, I don't know. Here?
Yeah, no. Mike, make it doesn't work.
Okay, so Carl Jung, as a psychologist, had very, you know, paid very much attention to the unconscious part of the mind. So how can this is mimicking for artificial intelligence at all? You know, sometimes when you are doing discoveries, most of the ideas are coming from those parts, at least those who are really honest, you know, how the motivations are coming. So without that, probably, you know, the scientific thinking and scientific discoveries are just mimicking of those, you know, properties which are put in very clever programming persons, I mean, who are inventing some sort of algorithms for providing to these computers, which are pretty fast. They are faster than we are, but the most important things I think are missing.
Yeah, so, okay. As you, so I don't speak about now consciousness. I don't speak about human intelligence. What I speak about is that acting academy so far, and find the properties which that define a cat. And it's, as I've said, it's a very long trip from defining a cat to defining ourselves and defining our own thoughts. So I think it's premature to speak about these questions yet, I think.
So I had the impression that you suggest that we shouldn't be afraid of these AIs. Mm-hmm. Is it true?
Sometimes I'm embarrassed with these questions because my neighbor is a very smart lady, knows much more than AIs today, and I still don't fear that she will conquer the world. So it depends on a lot of factors that, of course, so intelligence itself is not a danger, I think. It has much more to have an opportunity and intention and so on and so forth.
Last question.
A very short one. Can an AI recognize that it is wrong?
Wrong what? Wrong?
Wrong.
Something is wrong?
He is wrong.
He is
his
wrong.
Judgment, his classification, his actions.
Yeah. So it depends. Can a person recognize that he or she is wrong? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Yes, it depends on what are the features, what are the properties, what are the features he thinks about himself or itself. And then it can check that all of these facts are correct or not. And if they are not, then he may think that it is wrong. He's in a wrong state, for example. But it depends on the features, the imagination of itself. Just like humans, I think it's not a big difference. In this context, it's not much a difference. Yeah, that's okay, but the remark was that humans has an emotion. I think nowadays AI is not a thinking machine, it's a feeling machine. So nowadays the system one is gut feeling, pure gut feeling, pure emotions. So how would now ChatGPT makes a prediction of the next word, or how the Midjourney shows us an image that it doesn't, it's pure emotion, and it will show you a man with three legs without problem because it's just emotion. It seems that it's good, it's nice.
Okay. So
we should build a thinking machine and not a feeling machine, actually. This is the message.
Tony,
okay.
Thank you very much.
I
do hope in 10 years you shall answer those questions.